strongly believe that, but
if we set ourselves up, if we set ourselves up that, you know, like I find that, you know, that, you know, there's a saying, and I don't know where it comes from, but it said, you know, life is religion and religion is not life.
All life is religion and all religion relates to life.
Yes, yeah. That's what it is.
Kind of yeah. And, you know, unless you go out into the world and take yourself, your vulnerability, and put it right on the line for everyone to abuse, you know, you're not going to really come into contact with people, and they're everywhere. I talk to hundreds of people that have got what I call that universal sense of the Lord in them. They're just not conscious of it. But, you know, when I come into contact with them, that's what draws me to them, because I'm saying, there's the Lord in them. You know, like, I'm coming to you, Lord. I'm coming to you. And they become aware that there's something going on here, and they're not sure what it is. But, boy, it feels different, and it feels good. And I like it. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's how you sort of get that sort of conversation going. And, you know, you sort of, you know, you're not telling them, you know, because it's not telling them, this is what I believe, this is what I believe. You live what you believe. You don't have to talk about it. It's in your actions that people read the most. And that, even as a little kid, the thing I always said, my favourite saying is, don't listen to what they say, watch what they do. It teaches you so much in life you need to know. And as the littlest kid, I can remember that, and that's how, you know, like, through my understanding, I've been able to read people better. You know, like, I haven't listened to the ones always trying to suck me in and tell me to come their way. You know, I've watched what they do, and if they live what they say they are, then I trust that person. Then I can go with that person and work with that person. But I don't condemn the other person. It's just that's the way things are. But then you start coming in, you know, every 50th person you meet, you'll get some contact with, but it's very, very slow. So, you know, like, I could go out all day for the next 3 months and maybe get two people to come back. But to the Lord, that's wonderful. You've saved one soul, and that's to Him, like, you know.
Yeah, but it's not what is the Lord.
No, but it's not that you say it remains the Lord. You're bringing them into contact with something that they haven't had experience with. And, you know, like that doctor that came in the other night, I was amazed. You know, he said the nicest things. I've got to see him again. You know, for 5 minutes he was standing there listening to me talk to another guy, a Welsh guy. And, you know, like, after when we were alone and we met, he sort of just wobbled on and on and on and on about, you know, what he saw in me. And I said, that's amazing, because I don't see that. You know, but you automatically saw that, and that's what he was attracted to. You know, and he can see the Lord. Well, you know, because he believes in the Lord himself, he can see, I can see the Lord in you. You know, and that's what's coming through to you from the other people. And with the other people, you're sort of saying, you're acceptable to me. I don't care who you are or what you are. To me, I'm talking to you. You know, where they might be rejected by friends or family, or, you know, they don't come up to standard, or, you know, they're loners, or, you know, they're struggling with life and they've got their own problems. And, you know, you just break through that just for that moment. You know, and
so, okay, I think that links in with what you were saying, DW. Your model, this is interesting, is you're saying the crucial thing is you've got to examine yourself. That's where it comes from. It's easy to get wrapped up in the external activities. You've got to examine yourself. Then, as you're saying, Michael, you go out nearly like a spore or a bit of an internet site yourself. There is a central server where we can go and just be reminded of what it is that we're supposed to be doing, but then the actual church is distributed, and you're like you're saying, you're here, you're not telling anyone specifically about Swedenborg or anything, but your life is sending off. That's a nice, Michael's nice, he does that. Eventually they may ask you about what you believe, but the actual church is can be growing, but it's a distributed growth, not necessarily a physical thing of, yeah, the counter at the door says 400 today rather than 20. And I think that was good, because it does combine everything. That the focus is fix yourself up so that you're as good as you can be and live, and so that the message is quietly put out. And there may be additional numbers, but there probably are, you know, uncountable numbers out there that have been influenced by you.
Yeah.
And when you come to your eulogy, there'll be people saying,
"Let your light so shine." Yes. Yeah. Seeing your good works.
I can't help being reminded of a talk you gave, I think it was last year, before, about use as being the central spiraling influence and the first principle of the Lord's working. And one of the slides that you put up struck me. Somewhere Swedenborg had said that scarcely one in 10,000 people know about the internals of the word, you know, and I can't help thinking of that as, you know, we may be struggling against an actual law or a statistical distribution of the way in which life works for us. If we start to look at numbers in terms of the outcomes, we want to have certain outcomes and increases in numbers, and, you know, have lots of membership badges in our box. We struggle with exactly the same things with the association as well, because you know, we set up an aim to you know, make sure that Swedenborg's material is available in various ways and connecting, trying to connect it to things of real life and use in new ways, and get the numbers that, you know, really that actually interests me that much. But, you know, it's just interesting to observe that the numbers don't go like this, or they don't even go like that. They just seem to go like this. And it is quite interesting to see how people do connect at times to it, at a time that they do seem to need it, something specific, and they tap into that, and it may grow. Other times that they may come, they may find something that aggravates them, like, you know, you've actually got to work on yourself, sorry, but, you know, I've got other things to do, or this way is better because I like it, you know, and so they walk away, and that's kind of like a law in a way. I mean, to me, in my mind, you know, I could be wrong, but...
The quality of the use is not determined by... the number of responses. The quality of the use, the value of the use that the association serves is intrinsic to it. It serves a valuable use. We've got to take away our ideas of what makes that use valuable. It's valuable because the Lord is in the midst of it. You know, that's the thing.
And
that's church as well. Churches as well.
When I went on the radio, and I knew that God was going to ask me the question, how many are in your congregation? And it did. He did. And it's like as though the Lord prepared me for it, because if he hadn't, if I would have just got stuck and wouldn't have known what to say, because we're brought up to believe that, you know, the ones that have got 10,000 are the better ones. And us little ones down here, you know, we haven't even made on the first run yet. But anyway, the question come. The question come to me. And the Lord answered it, you know, really quickly. And I was just blown away with the answer, and it said, it's not in the numbers in our church that's what we hold significant, it's what's taught. That's what the Lord said through me. That's not what's important, but that's what man thinks is important. If you say to the guy on the street, well, how many people are in your church? You got me interested. How many go there? Any young girls go there? That's always a, you know, you can use that to sort of track them in, but, you know, like,
as has been done quite.
Yeah.
But you're bringing them in, so then you introduce them to what they need. You know, sometimes it's a little trick, you know, to bring them in, to get them interested, to get their foot in the door. And the Lord isn't against doing that if it's for the right reason, you know, to bring them into the Lord. Because sometimes, you know, you find yourself, you start off by doing something the wrong. You know, you see somebody you want to talk to and you think, oh, she's a nice bitch over there. I'll just talk about the weather. How's the weather? You know, and I don't know, God.
How
is the weather, Mike?
Hot.
Look down.
Well, yeah, on that, just on the... Oh, is it on that? I'm not sure. About how the message goes out. Chris Skinner's had a baptism of his daughter's child, and we went, and there was the church was packed. I've never seen it so, because his son-in-law and daughter had a lot of friends. So their friends, the parents of the friends, it was what a buzz, you know. And then I started to get a bit nervous. I thought, oh, they're all here, never heard of this place, never heard of the new church. I had that. I hope
Chris
this
better get it right today.
That's right. Because the thing that got me out of the Catholic Church was the finger pointing, and if you don't do that, and then all of a sudden, I said, but that's not the sort of place it is. So I just sat back, and he gave a his usual but wonderful Swedenborgian message, and there was a young chap behind me. He turned to his wife and said, I never heard that. Person in church said that's great. And I just sat back and said, yes, that's there it is in a nutshell. And they all went off, and who knows what happened then.
It's reverberating.
Yes,
I find it remarkable how God does his advertising, because it's just I work with a lot of marketing people, very high profile marketing people, who are just, the way they think is just amazing. They're on Red Cordial all the time. That's why I call their meetings Red Cordial meetings, because they come out with these brain scaring ideas. And they think, you can do it tomorrow, It takes 3 months. God seems to advertise all the time through correspondences everywhere around us, and yet it's a silent advertising that we are still in total freedom to take up the bits of it that we are ready to receive. And to grow into the understanding of what that advertising is really saying about the Word, about the Lord, and we grow into that if we're open and willing to be taught about it, and that is a different form of advertising altogether, where we put up what we do, what we are, how we see it, how we're growing. We're honest about how we grow into it, and how are still growing into it as we're doing now. And that itself is a very engaging form of encouraging others into the same wish, in a way. And that, maybe that's all the advertising we can do in our lives. Maybe we shouldn't aim to try and put billboards up and say, fridge magnets are okay, but billboards.
Well, we're only just finding that subliminal advertising works.
Wish we had gone to the master to begin with.
I'm actually really interested in subliminal advertising, because I work with a woman, a doctor at Macquarie Uni, who is a specialist in cognitive control, and she works a lot with kids, and discovered that advertising often relies on the knowledge that if you take away someone's attention from here over to here, then they have less control over what they're actually being sold at the time over here, and they're still selling the real message over here, while they pretend the focus is over here. The Coke cans being associated with something good, the Pepsi cans being associated with something bad, that impresses people more when they think they're focused on something over here. And, kids don't have that level of cognitive control, so they're perfect marketing subjects. They are very easy to influence, Anyway, so cognitive control, you can't influence someone's cognitive control if they are fully conscious. A fully conscious being, in my view, is unable to be diverted in that sense without knowing what's going on, because the Lord teaches them to watch what goes on all the time.
Well, that's why they market to kids, because they know they can do that.
So, the best thing we can do to go against that huge world trend right now is to work on ourselves and to become, fully aware of
it. Helps. If we set something in motion now, so there's 20 of us here or 15 of us here, say, let's go out in the world and see if we can bring one person or get in contact with a person you've never met, so just somehow ask the Lord to direct you to some stranger in the street and start up a conversation and see where they're at. You don't have to tell them about who you are or where you're from or what you believe. It's not necessary. You know what you believe, and that you don't share with people who don't want to hear about those sorts of things. But everybody is always interested in if you're prepared to listen to what they've got to say.
I did a thing.
That's where you really come into contact with people. If you show them that you care to listen to them, they'll just open up. And you say, well, what God do you believe? We all believe in God, but what God do you believe in? What does yours represent? And you're able then to, come really close. It's more of an intimate thing then. And just listen to them. You'll pick up, where they're going wrong, and you'll understand all of that, because that's the gift that we've got, but you know, you'll make contact with that person on a different level. That person won't forget you when they leave you, and it'll change in their mind. It might take a year, it might take 5 years for them one day to come back. I did that with a church that I went to. They baptized me, and I went back in about 3 years, just asked them a question. They said, "Oh, we baptized you, did we? How did you get away from us?" I said, "I just got dressed and walked out the door." they were really shocked. But you know, like, you've got to be prepared to sort of go out there and present yourself. It's like you can't sit in here in a marketing situation and say, "Now let's market to as many people, or let's get that message out everywhere we can to draw in the crowds." And you probably wouldn't have two or three come in. And they might sort of come in and walk around very carefully and then just wander away. You know what I mean? It's something about us. And I always thought that, you know, in those old Christian movies, you know, and they used to present them really well. That's how Christians used to be in the first century. They stuck together. They were like brothers and sisters. They all cared for one another. You know, and that was the image of Christianity that I got. And I thought, that's the sort of family I'm attracted to, because I never had that sort of family. I want to belong to a family where, you know, love is the first thing of the day, you know. And that sort of keeps everybody together. And
sometimes truth takes you away from the need to belong, I find, in my experience. You know, I've been drawn to churches because I needed to belong. I'd not really been very observant about what people believe, but then realizing what they believe, wanted to get out and you know, people ringing me up every night going, "Why are you leaving? You know, you can't do this, you're involved in everything, you know, you do music stuff, you know, don't leave." And there's the pressure's on, you know. But the truth took me out of there, because I realized that it wasn't.
You were ready to move on. It wasn't the whole
story, you know.
Were you ready to move on at that stage?
Yeah, so I can understand that at a certain level for certain people, and maybe there's a certain need in all of us, I guess, that we want to belong, and that's a very real human need. But the belonging and the actual, you know, having that also is this, at the same time as the vehicle of coming into contact with your truth.
Yeah, the illusion is
very different, you know, and I think today it's very mixed up.
The illusion is that something outside of yourself can fill your need.
Yes.
I mean, in terms of human relationships, there's the problem, you know.
Yeah.
This person can fill my need.
Mm. Yeah.
Doesn't work. We have to come around to seeing that, you know, only the Lord can actually fill us.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think that new show on television about the weddings and about how the women compete with one another to do the best weddings, I reckon that's right. A wicked show. Setting people up like that, you know. Oh, look at her wedding. Wasn't it terrible? Did you see the jokes and the way she
did it? No, I haven't seen it. But that's what reality TV is.
Same.
Watch
it. Like that.
No, I watched it a little bit. You know, like I turned it over and I caught it for a bit and I watched it a little bit because I thought, is this real or, you know, what is it? And then when I saw what it was, I thought, you know, really what happens to the human being inside, even though it's all outward, you know, it's all external. There's all the emotional stuff, the effect it has on each of those people that fail, you know, because there's one winner and she gets everything, and then there's all the ones that fail. And so they never hear the effect of the psychological effect that it'll have on that person, you know, and it's been exposed on the television. So everybody you meet now in the future will always remember you. You're the one that never made it. Or
what's
the
simple
one that didn't make it.
So why do they get ratings?
Because
people are in love with that. People are in love with that whole
vicarious.
Vicarious emotion is being projected onto that screen by that particular way of doing something.
And as it is, we choose realize that harm us. We choose it. I choose to watch that stupid show. If we could ever gauge inside, we're measured how much this is actually hurting you inside.
Right,
it would bring a sense of reality.
But in another sense, we're kind of intrigued how, you know, like, because as Dave Moffat once said at a talk here, that the opposite tends to confirm what something is, you know. That stuck with me very strongly. And so also we sometimes get vicariously drawn into watching these sort of things to go, well,
How does that compare with that?
The reality? Am I involved in this, or you know, is that part of me? And the unconscious part of people often says, "Oh, I want a certain person to win," or "Good on her for losing," because you know.
And she said, "He's against her," and
and all those emotions start to get expressed, just like. Sponsoring a football team, and you're not actually on the field playing the sport, but by golly, your life goes up and down depending on who's winning and losing, and whether they win fairly or not doesn't really come into it these days.
So your life has been pushed, like your whole life has been pushed into externals.
Your real self is behind a screen, and you're not able to see behind that screen where you are. And you're living through that. You're living through the
vicarious.
The movies is one, but I would have added, as I said to you the other day, I would have added sport to that as well.
Yeah.
People's heroes are not just movie heroes; they're also sporting heroes.
Yeah.
Same sort of deal. You know, it's an externalisation of something that really we ought to claim back and own.
Yeah.
And live in here. I think.
What I try to do now when I hear news of stuff in the world, like you know, disasters or awful murders and what have you, is always try and, you know, accept that, you know, instead of condemning them, is to accept that that's in me as well, and that's where I could go if I let myself.
Conditionals
are reflection. One more thing.
I was watching you then. I thought I'll give you just before because we. I know we've really a lot of good stuff's come out in this one. The best one that I come across in our church was when we went to the church camp when I went to the first church camp in 1993, and the experience I had with the kids. And it was, you know, from my experience, coming into a Christian group of people who all knew one another, and I was sort of like, you know, just a visitor. And all the kids were attracted to me because I had long hair, and they nicknamed me Peter Pan. I didn't even know who that was until I saw Robin Williams' movie, and I thought, oh, yeah, I'd like to be Peter Pan. Really not growing up. In that, you know, you're able to love children and accept their innocence and have them around you, and you see that part of God that, you know, that we once had that we've lost. And, you know, one of the children, I think it was one of the girls, turned around and said to me, "Isn't it a shame that, you know, we couldn't be like this all the time?"
Mm-hmm.
So that church environment created a conducive atmosphere for the kids to feel loved and wanted and respected, and you know, they were able to go up and hug one another openly in front of everybody else, and no fear of being laughed at or, you know, look at these two or, you know, whatever that you would get in the outside world, because the outside world would be jealous of that type of relationship that you had, you know, in that environment. And I thought, you know, isn't that amazing that, you know, that you know, we build a world of opposite, which is destructive. And here we had this little tiny, you know, pinprick in time where, you know, those people recognised that this was special to them. Those kids, and I'm sure when they grow up and they get old, you know, they'll look back at that time and remember, you know, the feeling that they had from that experience that come from that camp. And it was everybody's contribution, no doubt, because I felt it. You know, in the first hour, I was there. I was thinking of every way I was going to...
So I can put your name down. Can put your name down again.
My mum's got sick and I've got to go.
Put your name down.
And I've got to go home. Sorry, guys. And, you know, it took about an hour, and within an hour, I settled. And it was the Lord, no doubt, that settled me. But I settled and I stayed, and it was, like, yeah, the best experience I ever had. You know, because I'm saying to myself, I'm with all these Christian people here. What am I doing? I'm out of my depth. You know, I don't belong here. I don't fit in here. This isn't my place. But, you know, something happened, and yeah, once I settled in, and then when you heard the kids say this, you thought, that's where everything is. That's the future of everything. You know, they're the ones that will take us forward, you know.
Thanks.
So,
okay, let's take a little break. I think we'll be... that's a good opportunity to do that, and then we'll come back and Dave can do your AC session. Yeah.